complexity and sheer number of rebate deals that was there, we were handling it on Excel spreadsheets and partially on a system that really wasn't designed to handle any of it and couldn't cope with the volume, the complexity, the number of different brands, thousands and thousands of different customers, hundreds of thousands of products, and over 1,000 different suppliers. And when you tot all that up and try to imagine dealing with that on Excel, it just didn't work.
Hello and welcome to the Gross Profit Podcast. My name is James Kennedy. I'm the CEO and co-founder at procurementexpress.com. We take the hassle out of managing your company's purchasing with magical features, but we're not here to talk about that today. Instead, I have Nick Rose, CFO at enable.com, who I've invited along to talk about something which I've been looking for a while to talk about, which is rebates. Rebates is a word I didn't understand. I wasn't even aware of until a couple of years ago when one of our customers came to us and showed us how they were using our software to manage rebates within their business. But Nick and Enable have taken it to a whole other level. So Nick, you're very welcome to the show. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about yourself and your background, just for those who haven't met you before.
I'm a finance professional by background, trained with one of the big four in London, and then spent several years with a big building materials, construction materials distributor in the UK called Travis Perkins. While there, went through lots of different roles. They're a kind of $10 billion business and several brands, lots of different things going on. One of the things that we had in huge numbers was rebates, and hence the kind of transition to Enable over the last few years. I actually ran that part of the business for TP in terms of finance side of keeping track of the rebates.
Okay, well, let's cover the basics first. So maybe just assume nothing. Maybe you could tell us a bit about what a rebate is and why do they exist?
The basic form of a rebate and the way we define it at Enable is a rebate is any transaction where money flows back through the supply chain. So generally speaking, the customer will pay the supplier or manufacturer for products or services that they're purchasing from them. And a rebate will flow back down the kind of supply chain. So the supplier or manufacturer will pay it back to the customer. The difference between a rebate and a discount, for example, if you wanted to buy 10 chairs from a manufacturer, then they're going to sell them at $100 each, and they might give you a discount of $10, so $90 each. There you go, $900 for 10 of them. That discount is very quickly forgotten and has no bearing on what you might do in the future. With a rebate, rebates are earned, and the way you tee them up is set thresholds, set targets, and try and influence each other's behavior as a buyer-seller relationship. And so when you're buying those 10 chairs, one or both parties might say, well, what if we bought 100? You're going to give me more than 10% back. You're going to give me an extra 5 or 10 at the end of the year. And the supplier will say, okay, but I don't believe you're going to hit 100. So let's pay you at the end once you've hit that target rather than give you a discount up front. And that means as a purchaser, your behavior is going to be influenced. And so you begin to create a mutually beneficial business arrangement where from a supplier point of view, you're getting more of your customer's share of wallet. And from a customer's point of view, purchasing, you can see that the more you purchase, the better deal you're going to get. And that helps, obviously, your gross profit, which is the reason I'm here. To talk to you.
Okay, so there's two elements I heard there. There's the sort of what every salesperson has heard at least once in their career, which is, oh, I'm going to do so much business with you, you should give me a deeper discount. But you know, only one in 10 times that's actually true. So this kind of aligns the incentives here where they actually will, if they do get the volume up, I guess it's a volume thing. So the higher the volume, the deeper the discount. But it's more than that, it affects your balance sheet as well. So the money cash flow is actually moving backwards and forwards.
Yes.
So it has a very practical impact as well for managing your balance sheet.
Yeah. So they influence behavior of both sides of the transaction and drive that kind of increase in volume. Rebates can be take any form. Lots of them are volume based or dollars spend based. Others might be, well, we're launching this new product. If you take that new product, we'll give you a bigger rebate on the product that you already buy from us. You know, you can use them to flex in many different ways. And in terms of balance sheet, you know, higher up the supply chain you go, the supplier or manufacturer, well, obviously they're getting more cash paid up front and then pay out the rebate later. From a purchasing point of view, that's less good. But you've got to have the rationale behind it is you're getting a better gross margin at the end of it for the kind of side of tying up some of your cash, you're going to make more profit.
So this is something that, you know, you need to train your sales team on your, if you're on the vendor side, on how to do these deals. It can't be straightforward and it's got to be organized with the finance team. I suppose it does align the sales team as well to actually make sure that the customer is getting value, right? So it doesn't just end with delivering the chairs. We make sure those chairs actually got there. And yeah, you're kind of working more with the buyer to make sure they sell the chairs. So I guess in some industries that might extend out maybe into the retail side of it or whatever.
Absolutely.
So maybe you can just give us an example of your first experience there with the construction business. Like, how did it align people properly and what sort of scale were we talking about here in terms of the rebates available?
So the scale, just to throw some numbers, was the amount of supplier rebate income was more than three times the net profit of the group. So, you know, well over £1 billion in GDP of supplier rebate income, again, set against 350, 400 million. And these are public numbers, so I'm not giving any secrets away. And we're going back 4 or 5, 6 years. So what we used to say was, look, if we're a percent wrong on our rebates, that could be 3% or more wrong on net profit. Extremely material issue. And in a scenario where judgment is involved, because you have a lot of how much accrual should we put in the accounts for what our suppliers are going to pay us over the next 2 or 3 months in the rebate coming back. So there's quite a judgment-based piece. And also the complexity and sheer number of rebate deals that was there. We were handling it on Excel spreadsheets and partially on a system that really wasn't designed to handle any of it and couldn't cope with the volume, the complexity, the number of different brands, thousands and thousands of different customers, hundreds of thousands of products, and over 1,000 different suppliers. And when you tot all that up and try to imagine dealing with that on Excel, It just didn't work, and we couldn't create the accuracy, the reliability, the trust in the numbers that the sales or the procurement teams actually really needed to drive the business forward. And you take that to its kind of final conclusion. We most definitely made poor decisions, poor trading decisions through lack of accurate insight to our net cost of goods, maybe influenced, you know, would we invest in that particular branch or de-invest in it and maybe even close it because it looked unprofitable, when actually if we'd had accurate rebates, it could have been making more money than we thought. And the long story short, once we, and we'll get on to what we did, but when it all shook down, we found we had made some of those poor decisions because of lack of clarity on information.
Oh, interesting. So this business, did you say shut down on the back of eventually couldn't continue trading?
Not a whole business, just individual branches, right, across the 2,000 or so that were around in the group. And
okay,
you see some looking more profitable than they should have been and some looking less just because of the way it was allocated.
So from someone from the outside, it seems a really tricky situation to be where, you know, three times your net profit was tied up on this mechanism that basically depended on your vendors, because anything can go wrong there. Like, so the vendors can go bust, I guess. There can be disagreements over, you know, the contracts, etc. It's a very tenuous situation. How do you wind up in that situation? Is this something that's built over the decades and it's just the way that industry works? And maybe you could just explain a little bit more the industry.
So it was built as merchanting, but like any kind of trade-based industry rather than out-and-out retail, there's really no fixed price to a customer in a branch. Do a deal locally or even nationally if you're a big business, and drive the price down as best you can on the products you most often buy, and then have one-off negotiations on lots of other products. But what that means is there's lots of flexibility in pricing at the point of sale by the branch teams and things like that. And so one of the reasons the rebate value became so high was we wanted to demonstrate to the branches that there was a high screen cost, if you like, as the kind of invoice cost of the product, to deter them from discounting it too much.
Interesting.
And the thought was if they knew the real true cost of what we were buying, say a bag of cement for, then the temptation for the branches, with the customer standing right in front of them demanding lower and lower prices,
sure,
the temptation is to drive it down to a margin that's just not sustainable, and you'd lose profit. So there's a lot of kind of guaranteed level rate rebates in there just to kind of maintain that aura of uncertainty in pricing. But behind the scenes, we didn't have the real insight either. So setting price guidance was very, very difficult. The other bit that kind of springs to mind is, as you're buying different products, it's all about different routes to market. So your rebate rate and therefore your net cost of goods and therefore your selling margin will change depending on whether you bought one pallet worth of say, let's take cement bags, 25 kilo bags of cement as an example. If you bought one pallet, that's got one price per bag. If you bought a full lorry load of pallets, so 24 pallets of them at one time, you're going to get a cheaper price because it's actually cheaper for the supplier distributor to get it to you. So a lot of the profit in that builder's merchanting space actually resides in how you buy the stuff as well as how you sell it.
So what I heard there was that these branches, these were kind of internal to your organization. So you owned all the branches, is that correct?
Yeah.
Or were they, and then this was kind of a mechanism, a little bit market up to market down. So because of course people at the maybe employee level don't fully understand the cost structure. It sounds like, oh, only 10% off this, what the difference does it make? But there's a lot more complicated than that. And in order to maintain that margin, you've basically got to have you're holding them to account as well, because I guess their bonus structure then was related to how much of the rebate they actually managed to get. Was that correct?
Yeah. So the procurement team especially were targeted at increasing rebates for a period of time, and that ended up materially increasing the dollar value. That's not good for cash flow. It was kind of not a great time. But actually bringing that back, I think a lot of the deals are restructured now and you know much more focused on actually driving the right decisions and thresholds and you know, pushing buying to get more rebate if you actually spend more.
I wasn't aware of that. So this is something you can use internally in an organization, but presumably with external vendors as well.
It was all external vendors. And then if there was an internal rebate concept where if we passed it through central distribution,
okay,
that central distribution point would make a margin to cover its own costs and then sell it out to the branches. And then it would rebate back out that profit to the branches depending on what they bought. And lining it up was nigh on impossible. What happened then was the realization that we didn't really have great control and great insight into the numbers kind of became very acute. The businesses and particularly the sales and procurement teams were not happy with the way finance was reporting the results because we couldn't explain at any depth or any detail the reasons behind swings in profitability by product or by branch or by supplier, customer, whatever dimension you throw at it.
Let's bring us back to that day that you got the big job. You said, fantastic, I've been put in charge of these rebates, have a glass of champagne with your wife the night before, and you get in and you realize it's all on spreadsheets. What?
At the time, I was CFO of one of the divisions in the business. And, you know, it was kind of, do I want to grasp this nettle?
Right.
And actually, the opportunity was there to do something significant about it and bring in a better way of working. And that's why I went looking for this solution, found two or three options. And this is back in 2016, 2017. Nothing really existed to help a company out with this issue. You'll find that ERP vendors say they can handle rebates, and they can to an extent. And that extent is very vanilla flavored, very simplistic rebates. As soon as you get any kind of complexity or tiered deals or structures or strings where one rebate will work off another one. The ERP simply won't cope with it. And we've, you know, none of them have got that functionality still to this day. The long story short is we found Enable, and we spent about a year partnering with Enable, helping with providing industry knowledge, understanding of the business, the market, and how rebates really work. And there was another customer of Enable's doing the same thing. And Enable created the kind of V1.0 of the product as it is today. And that was implemented in 2017. We went back and looked at the previous deals from the previous year, which had been closed, and realized that there were lots of errors and lots of opportunity for, let's say, driving better, more profitable deals for my business going forwards, but also just by restructuring them, actually making them better for the suppliers on the in the same kind of motion. It wasn't that it was all one-handed or one-sided. It actually drove a mutually beneficial outcome. And one of those reasons is that with greater insight and greater data integrity and all of that, roughly speaking, the level of disputes with suppliers dropped by 90%.
Wow.
And you just think the time and effort and pain spent dealing with those disputes just going away. And of course, you still have a few. But it made such a huge difference that the commercial team could then spend pretty much all of their time working on improving the deals and improving the way the business was moving product around, getting it to our customers, sourcing it. A ton of benefit, financial benefit, was immediately gained out of that. And we also, by rerunning the previous year's deals, we realized that there was about, in the low single digits, but several million of rebate income that we'd underclaimed from the previous year.
Sometimes wonder why, you know, more startup companies don't look for this opportunity to work with finance teams, because oftentimes finance teams are the ones who really have the problems which have the impact. Yeah. And also they have
absolutely,
and have the right level of systems thinking to realize, hey, there's a better way here. The big difference that I see in your story is that most finance teams are inherently paid to be conservative and to do the things that the way have been. So why did you decide to tackle this? Because surely there was, sure, career upside maybe, but definitely career downside if it goes wrong. So what made you?
I could have gone horribly wrong.
Yeah.
I think two things. So I'd start by thinking about the world of accounting and being in a finance team. And, you know, I've said this to a few people over the last couple of years. What's happened in the last 10 years is accounting and finance has gone from being a team that kept the score and reported results in the past to one that still keeps the score and still keeps compliance going and does all the internal controls. And that's super important. That'll never change. But what's layered on top of it now is being a business partner and actually driving value and being part of the conversation when you're talking about strategy and customers and you know, investments that you want to make in the business. So that's the side of finance that really gets me enthusiastic, as you feel like you're making a difference. And so we went down that road of saying, okay, change is needed. I love getting my hands dirty with big change projects, and I've done quite a few of them in the past. And the opportunity was there to make a real difference to the business and stop some of the pain points. So why wouldn't I want to have a go?
I hear this all the time from finance teams about how becoming more strategic is an opportunity. And I know, though, there's a culture, especially in sales-led organizations, where that story is hard to sell sometimes because they don't believe it, or they believe the sales team are the heroes. I mean, there's always a little bit of a frisson between the two, let's say, naturally set up to oppose each other in some sense.
Healthy tension,
yeah, let's put it that way. It's always said that, hey, if we can just clear up our time to be more strategic, you know, we'll be able to add more value to the business. And at the back of every business owner's mind is, well, aren't you just trying to go home early on a Friday? You know, is that really true? But in your case study here, you're able to point to the bottom line once that truly did happen. So it was about trusting the team to say, okay, well, let's try and free up their time. Sounds like 90% less time was spent on admin.
Yeah, on the disputes piece. But it genuinely meant we found products that we were selling at a loss.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
A net loss. Once you layer in the cost to serve, you're never going to gain any credibility if you just go and say, "Oh, I know the answers. This is what you should do." You've got to prove it, and little by little, you go, "Well, you know, with this insight, you can make that decision. It would be better for us all."
Yeah.
And you just prove it gradually and get that moving.
I heard two steps there, though. The first was really freeing up the time. Enable the space to create the savings. Once you take away that extra admin time, that's what allowed people to see. So it wasn't so much the software itself, it was the improved communication and clarity that provided the humans the ability to figure out the savings.
I think the software takes the pain point away.
Right.
And then the software can't go and do deals for you, but it can suggest stuff.
Yeah.
So there's lots of little tricks within it. There's a opportunities and threats kind of little table that says, you know, if you just increase, you know, last 3 months of the year, you're dipping for the line to try and hit your numbers. And it says, you know, you're spending $1 million a month on this supplier. If you just did 1.1 million a month for the next 3 months, you're going to hit another rebate tier. And while you might have a little bit of excess stock, your return on investment in that is 100,000 back in extra rebates. So on 300,000, say, of purchases, you're going to make 100,000, 30%, 33% return. Makes total sense. Let's do it now because we can see it happening. And conversely, there's threats. So if your purchases just dip a little bit, then you could go down a level in your rebate income. You know, you lose a lot more money than you realize. So There's hooks like that in the software that really help drive decision making, especially towards the end of the year as you're kind of trying to make your number.
Yeah. Okay. And let's face it, we are kind of gameable as humans. Like I have my frequent flyer miles with Air France, and I know it doesn't make any sense, but God damn it, I want to get to the next level, and that's just the way we are. And that's even so. Yeah. Your transition, then, I have to ask, was it weird moving from a customer to being, what do they call it, gamekeeper turned poacher? Is that the right expression?
I guess so, in a way. So, you know, I remember the conversation. I went home. I'd had a conversation with who's now my boss, our CEO, Andrew, who he's describing his vision for the company, which is, you know, take this product and make it kind of saleable in a scale. And go and get some funding from West Coast VCs to plow into the business, grow the team faster than we otherwise could, and really create this category called rebate management. And having been through my kind of last 2 or 3 years of history and understanding both the pain point and seeing the solution make actual genuine and very instant ROI, hard numbers, I thought this is too good to miss. And I just said, you know, if you want someone to come and run finance for you, please give me a shout and we can talk. And a few months later, he did. And a few months later, I joined. But the conversation at home was kind of, you're going from 24,000 colleagues in a huge company with lots of safety net to 50 colleagues in a tiny company with no funding. And what on earth are you doing? I said, but think about what we can do here. It was just that stage of life where I wanted to do something different and take a risk. And so far it's paid off because we've grown our top line sales by 25-30 times since I joined in mid-2019. We've grown from about 50-55 people to 630-ish today, and we've raised over $250 million of funding in the last 4 years to really grow not just the sales motion, but more importantly even to invest in the product and, you know, keep adding those functions and making it as best as we can to solve the different pain points that our customers have.
Enable is a Canadian-based company, is it? Or did you all move over?
No, US.
US.
So its background is UK. Mm-hmm. So that's where it was kind of born as such. But when we raised our first round of funding in February 2020, it was with California, San Francisco-based VCs, and we set up our corporate head office in San Francisco. What we wanted to do was obviously grow the team, and we didn't want to grow a big team in San Francisco, just time zones, cost, and that sort of thing. So we landed on Toronto as the place to really put our feet down and grow at scale in North America. And I made the decision with Enable and with my family to move across middle of last year.
So you decided to go all in?
Yeah, exactly.
It sounds like this is well baked into certain industries. Who is a potential customer probably already having a rebate program? Or is there anyone who maybe isn't using one now but should consider it? What are the attributes of like a good customer for Enable?
So really, it's any business or industry that has B2B transactions. It is almost as simple as that. So manufacturers, distributors, retailers, buying groups all have rebates. And everywhere we look, the figure we landed on through some research is that global supply chain is $80 trillion, trillion with a T. Almost all of that has some kind of deal in place between trading partners, where those deals are used to drive behavior or even just create a structure for the businesses to operate within. And because of human nature, whenever there's a structure with two sides, each side will be trying to get the best possible deal for themselves. The enlightened ones, I guess, realize that they have to help their trading partner in order to help themselves. And that's where rebates and deals like the ones we cater for are born. So it's in pretty well every industry that we look at. And we've begun to move not just from physical goods, but into services as well. So there's a big recruitment company that is a customer of ours. They have rebates on placements that they place with their big customers. And they're just dealing in people, not in physical products and services. But we do have a kind of core ideal customer profile, if you like. It's around accuracy of payments and collections, and we've built really stronger density in plumbing, building materials, HVAC, construction, automotive, electrical, healthcare, those kind of size of businesses. Typically, we would sell to finance plus one of the sales or procurement teams. It's generally finance in a company that's managing the rebates in terms of the money flow and everything like that. And it's generally the either sales or procurement team that is negotiating the rebates with their trading partners. And we're pretty agnostic to which side of the coin we're on. It's just the flip of the signs.
Okay.
Really, whether it's buying or selling.
So it sounds like if you're on a finance team, I guess there's a certain, doesn't matter about the size, but I'm certain there's a certain amount of turnover. This starts to become, to make sense, 10 million plus or...
Yeah, I mean, if you're, you know, small business, is Excel is fine, right? It does a job and you can design it to work in the way you want. As soon as you hit quite a few millions of purchases or sales and there's multiple deals with different trading partners hanging off the back of it, Excel will break.
Yeah.
And, you know, you have all sorts of human errors. It kind of reaches its shelf life at a certain scale. So we have some customers down at the 10, 20, 30 million dollar kind of size. And we have customers up at the $100 billion size as well. So it's all the way through.
Yeah, I heard someone say that once the spreadsheet gets beyond 100 rows, maybe that's a bit small, but like any spreadsheet with more than 100 rows starts to become unwieldy. So that's a good benchmark.
Someone changes a deal and you've got 1,000 rows of different things in there. You don't want to be doing that manually. You will make a mistake and calculate the wrong figure ultimately.
And who's going to audit that change, and you know, how are you going to justify it?
No, exactly. And that's, that audit point is actually a really, really good one. So we have a rock solid approval workflow where you can see who's done what in the deal. It's got to go through approvals. Your trading partner gets a free login to sign in and approve the deal their side as well. So, and this is quite a neat trick. Rather than negotiate a deal on a Word document, PDF it, sign it, do all that, and then shove it in a system folder somewhere and never look at it again.
Yeah.
While in the meantime, you're chucking it over the fence at some finance analyst who's got to decipher what's been written, understand it, and then create some kind of way of tracking that deal.
Yeah.
Instead, the deal terms are created within the solution itself. And it's extremely flexible and can cope with pretty much anything you throw at it in terms of term types. And then you sign it off within the system. And because the deal has been created in the system, as long as you've got the right data flowing in, it can't help but calculate the right answer. And it's very easily moved around and fine-tuned, and you can see who's done what.
And your big four accountant will quite happily charge you by the hour to trawl through all those documents and figure out what
absolutely.
Happened.
So, yeah.
So there's a cost saving there too.
For sure. But the real saving there is one of auditability and risk, control, risk mitigation of something going wrong.
Sure. And improved clarity and that barrier between operations and finance. My favorite saying is everyone has a plan to get hit in the face. And that's Mike Tyson. And it's true. The sales team, the operations teams are out there. It feels like they're just trying to get the job done or whatever and do whatever it takes. But, you know, they have to, you have to make it line up at the end of the day, and it removes a lot of, improves clarity, which removes temptation. I would say that much.
And they have to be able to trust the numbers that the finance team then gives them.
Sure. Yeah.
And this helps massively helps do that.
So before we wrap up, I just like to ask you a question I ask all my guests, which is, who do you have a business hero and why?
It's a tough one to think about, and I'm glad you tipped me off that you'd ask it, because I don't tend to really kind of go for individual heroes. But I think what I'd say is I love seeing people being trailblazers and really creating new categories or new ways of working and making change that has a positive effect. And, you know, in the industry I am in, which is software as a service, everything's on the cloud, fully native, on there, and there's one person who's kind of credited with creating the whole idea, and the, you know, there's lots of others involved, I'm sure, but someone like Marc Benioff at Salesforce, who had this idea, said, right, I'm going to create a company that competes on an entirely different approach to the people that are kind of market leaders at the moment. Without that, I think people wouldn't have shifted from the concept of buying a piece of software and housing it on an on-premise computer that you can look at and touch and feel, and humans like to buy physical things, to that shift from physical structures to something up there in the ether on a cloud that is kind of intangible but is there. I think, you know, to drive that as a change in the way humans work, rather than just build a business, is pretty incredible.
I mean, as an entrepreneur myself, I totally get that. I look at that as creating something that would not happen without you. Like you can doing something new and creating, making a change that wouldn't be there without you, which I think is exhilarating too. I like that. Nick, you've been a star. Thanks very much for coming along to the Gross Profit Podcast. If people want to connect with you or find out more about Enable, how can they do that?
Enable.com is our website. And you can find me on one of the tabs in there, or just look me up on LinkedIn, Nick Rose, and Enable will find me, and I'm happy to connect and love talking with people. We also run a rebate strategists community. There's links all over our website for it, but I can put people in touch with the guys who run it as well. Free to join. And what it does, it brings together thought leaders in the rebate space. And I see lots of posts around, how do you deal with rebates that do this? What's your recommendations? And you've got a lot of conversation going. That's culminating actually in our annual event, which is in about 1 month's time in Boston, that we call Catalyze. And we're bringing everything together to talk rebates and rebate strategy with a few hundred people there.
Okay, I think I'll sign up for that myself. Sounds interesting.
Yeah.
So Nick, thanks for coming along. If you're still listening, congratulations. We are launching I have a side podcast with content, which is just going to be not for the public. You can get it at kimberlyexpress.com/newsletter if you sign up there. So I like to know, sometimes when I talk about the more intimate things about our business here. I'd like to know exactly who's going to be listening. So I'm going to be publishing them on that newsletter. So if you've got this far, consider signing up. I love talking to Nick because he's also in the software industry, both the CFO and selling to finance teams. If you have a software business that does a similar thing, I'd love to hear from you. You can get me on LinkedIn or email james.kennedy@procurementexpress.com. Until the next time, thanks very much for listening.